Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. All right, time now for our play-by-play call of the day. 18 threes last night for Virginia, their win at Syracuse.
Out of Jerome, he backpedals, thought about the three, now passes to Guy. He's got the hot hand. Why not? Another three from the right wing for Kyle Guy, who has just hit the 17th of the game for Virginia.
Yeah, and ended up with 18 threes last night, 54 of their 79 points outside the arc. Wow. All right. At some point, just so you know, Sean, we're going to get to your guy. I know you're a big Antonio Brown guy. I got it. And your guy, I mean the suit will do anything. Suit will do anything to keep him. You know that. It's the way it is. Let's bring in Neil Kulong. Neil, just back from the Canary Islands after another great vacation. Neil, welcome to the show. It's great to have you back.
It's great to be here. A little chillier for my taste, but it's good to be home.
It's great to have you back. You probably wonder every week where the intro is going to go. All right, so
I thought about that about 3 years ago, but yes, there was a time I was braced and ready to go.
Now you're just like, hey, yeah, go ahead, fire away. All right, so you've watched the combine. What were your initial impressions? What stuck out to you, or maybe better yet, what didn't stick out to you?
I think the way I felt about this, and this is really just more of a casual observer that doesn't put a ton of stock into the combine. It almost felt like the Olympics. When you watch the Olympics, not even necessarily mean the obvious pun with the underwear Olympics, but you watch like the track and field events at the Olympics. There are always like world records being broken, and I always found that to be really amazing. You know, they 4 year after 4 year, people get that much better than the people that came before them. It seemed to me this combine was like the Super Olympics in the sense that there are a lot of guys that are doing things that we haven't even come close to seeing. I mean, you know, a guy like Quinton Williams running what he's running at the size that he is, that's insane. And in many ways, it's almost like it gets to a point where it's not just about pure athleticism. There's something to be said about technique as well, because he looked like a sprinter. Right. They really taught him well. He knew how to move himself from point A to point B. I mean, a lot of that stuff doesn't necessarily, you know, translate into the game itself. But one thing we know for sure is that guy is really big and he's really fast. That's a good combination for a top three pick.
And what's interesting about the combine to me is that you have guys that spend 6 weeks on just doing combine events. And then when their pro day is over with, you know, and around here the pro day is going to be in a couple of weeks, they go back to football. Because they're not really doing football, they're doing combine stuff. They're trying to get better at all the combine stuff because they know in the job interview they have to be.
Yeah, it only makes sense. You have to you want to show those times to be the best that they can be, of course. It's more of, to me, a lesson in why when you get down to the hundredths of a second, it might not be the most, you know, necessary aspect of his evaluation. And for me, I would think the real value would be meeting the player, talking to him, and seeing how seriously they took this event, what they're looking for, what things kind of make them tick, and how good a shape they're in. You know, that's an important factor, obviously, for any athlete.
I agree.
It's the basic factor. If they don't want to put the time and effort into showing their absolute best when they're out there, then, well, you know, I don't know what to say. But you also see things like that one receiver or a defensive back who is, you know, backpedaling to high point a ball. He catches it, his shoe comes off, and he has the wherewithal to stop and pick up his shoe and you know, run in the direction he needs to go. And that's an aware player. You like to see those kinds of things. Overall, it's going to showcase the best athletes. It's going to expose the guys that aren't really all that athletic. But scouts have to know most of this stuff. Now, if you were to ballpark what Quinton Williams was going to run, you might not have hit it, you know, dead on, but right, you're not necessarily surprised that he ran faster than other defensive linemen did. So a lot of this is really just kind of confirmation for the scouts and an opportunity for a team to speak with the player and see what he's about.
I felt in the last couple of years that I don't think it would hurt, say, around the Senior Bowl to have an underclassman or a junior combine to then give the player the option of like, I should keep going, or, you know what, I should go back to school. How do you feel about that? Because there's so many underclassmen that have declared for the draft.
I think that's a great question. I'd probably file it under the reason why the NFL doesn't try to compete with the NCAA on Saturdays. I don't think the NCAA would be real thrilled about giving even more juniors and even sophomores the opportunity to leave for the NFL. But at the same time, the NFL knows that they have the Senior Bowl coming up. That's always been kind of the traditional focus, is on the senior players. I mean, in the grand scheme of it, it really hasn't been all that long in which underclassmen really kind of took over enough of the draft to say, you know, class doesn't really matter as much as it used to. You know, maybe even 25 years ago, guys who would declare were on the outskirts. You know, really was kind of an anomaly to do that. If you were to get them together, I certainly think there's an internet draft culture that would absolutely love the idea of another combine.
Right.
I'm not 100% convinced the NFL would want to commit that much into having an active role in a player deciding to go pro or not, just simply because of the variables that come into it. They don't want to infect anyone's mind with it. But I'm not entirely sure that, you know, there are many fence sitters when it comes to this anyway. I think a lot of these guys have a pretty good idea going into the first year of eligibility whether they're going to come back or not.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. I think when they make up their mind, they make up their mind. I just think it wouldn't hurt to have at the Senior Bowl, you know, like a 2-3 day thing. Not playing in the game, but have an underclassman combine where suddenly a guy looks around and says, you know what, I think I need another year. And then it allows them to make a better decision, but that's for another time. I got to ask you about Landon Collins. Would he be a fit for the Pittsburgh Steelers?
I'll say this. I don't think a whole lot of guys would be a bad fit for the Steelers in their safety department right now.
Yeah.
They've invested a lot in that position, though. So I would think the Steelers want to take more of a developmental approach. You know, Coach Bradley just finished his first season there. I think they expected Morgan Burnett to have, you know, a little bit more of a role on the team, if not last year, certainly this year. That's not going to happen. So I think there's enough turmoil that's gone on. They're going to want to keep the guys that they know right now and try to get some consistency for them moving forward. I think Landon Collins makes plays. We've seen him do that. I don't think a whole lot of people really believe the tape that he's putting out there, if that makes sense. I don't know how good he is. I just know that the Giants are a team that really they've struggled defensively for a couple of years now.
Right.
And Collins has been statistically their bright spot. Why would they not
want
to?
But he struggled this year. I can tell you right now,
yeah,
Landon Collins struggled this year.
I think there are a lot of guys that defensively there are a lot of guys that didn't play well. And on top of that, they threw him into a pretty tough spot. They took away a lot of the veteran guys that they had. They're trying to get better. I thought, and obviously I'm wrong about this, but I thought it was really more like, okay, Landon, you're our guy. Just we're doing some things. Don't worry about it. Do the best that you can. To me, this kind of suggests something else. But I say all of that with the idea in mind that we don't know exactly what Landon Collins is looking to get. It very well could be the Giants – are listening to him, and they're seeing that he is adamant at a certain price that's well above what they want to pay. And they're not going to waste their time with the franchise tag if they know that they have no chance of signing him long term. They don't need him that badly. So, especially when you're looking at a guy, he was a second round pick. He was thought to be, you know, maybe a first, maybe a second. Mm-hmm. Going 33rd overall, I think he generated a lot of attention because of that. So people tend to remember him. And he had a great rookie year. I don't know if we've seen him play that well since then, but we see a pretty solid player in perhaps the coldest market for in the league. You know, there are a lot of good safeties that weren't signed until late last season, if they were signed at all. And a lot of those guys are free agents again. Then you have another draft on top of it. So I don't know exactly what he's looking for. The situation's kind of odd. I'm curious to see what more will come out of this, or what type of market will materialize for Collins in what seems to be kind of an underwhelming free agent class up to this point.
All right, so the Steelers, obviously there's certain areas they need to look at in free agency. And then obviously the draft, they need to couple the two together. What are you interested to see the free agent approach, and what would that free agent approach then tell you about their draft approach?
It really kind of make you wonder. They've got some cap space. It's not a ton. It's not terrible. It's probably where they like to be in terms of an operating budget. They didn't expect to have as much as they did, just with the moves that they made last year and the fact that they couldn't possibly have expected Le'Veon Bell to not play to get that $14.5 million back on their cap. They've got a bit more money than they're used to dealing with, but the real elephant in the room here is Mr. Big Chess and what exactly they can get for him. I think that's going to play in to their free agency plans. If they can draft a guy at a position of need, the Steelers in particular, but this is probably true of most teams, they'd rather do that than sign for a retail price a free agent. Mm-hmm. They're more in the speed of a Morgan Burnett, a guy that, you know, you sign assuming that he wants to play the role that you have him signed to play. He doesn't end up wanting to do that. They want to go out and get kind of more of a role-playing starter, a guy that they can plug in there and have some, you know, specialized production with, but not spend a ton of money to do it. If they are able to get a second first-round pick in trading Brown, just something that hasn't happened, I don't think, since like 1989, I wonder how much of that would impact their decision to go after somebody in free agency. I'm not 100% sure. Excuse me. They're able to do much in terms of what's out there. I don't think it's a great market, but I expect them to probably sign a player or two. I'd really like to see him bring in more of an alpha defender, a leadership guy, somebody who's been around, somebody that can kind of, you know, rein in the locker room, or at least kind of balance it out, offense versus defense, and, you know, give some fire to a defensive unit that is in the media and among the public. And, you know, a lot of them are kind of on the block for their future. I think if they bring somebody else in to establish that attitude and get a little bit meaner, that would be a good addition for them. I'm not sure who that is that's out there right now, but I don't know how much they would spend. I think they would for a veteran player that can come in and fill a particular role, much of it being off the field.
Antonio Brown, though, says he doesn't need football.
Okay.
Did you see that one?
I don't know how many, you know, bullets he has left in that gun to fire. You know, trying to suggest that he doesn't need football and being this up in arms about what happened to him playing football, I don't know how well that meshes together. To some degree, I think we've gotten past the point where much of this has to do with Brown's contract. I think, you know, he might feel slighted to some degree. But the intensity that these issues have brought up, when it really wasn't that long ago that he was always saying the opposite and he wasn't acting like this at all, it really makes you wonder if this is truly a contract issue for him. And this is the way that he feels is best to get out of town, even to the point where I'm not accusing anybody of anything. It just kind of makes you wonder, is he trying to get himself cut so then he can go sign this mythical, fully guaranteed contract that he thinks 30-year-old receivers get all the time? I'm not sure what his end game is. He stated that he wants to get traded. Clearly, nobody in their right mind would suggest doing what he's doing if he does want to get traded, because the Steelers aren't going to trade him for nothing unless they're absolutely forced to the wall, to the last degree of putting up with all this publicly. He would have to do something pretty shocking and dramatic at this point to get the Steelers to accept a conditional sixth-round pick, for example. And to do that, I think, would really show the rest of the league that this guy's crazy. I'm not going to guarantee him anything if I even want him on my team. He's not playing this entire thing very well. I'm not sure where it's going to end, to be honest with you. It's just nuts.
And with all due respect, and it's just a guess on my part, I don't think he knows what his end game is. I don't think he... I can't tell what his goals are, what his destination is. I don't know what he's trying to do. I mean, because nobody's allowed to have any contact with him.
He doesn't seem inclined to really have that contact with anybody. If the owner of the team's got to fly down to West Palm Beach to sit in a room and smile and give him all the respect in the world, and to have your general manager tell you to your face, "I'm sorry, we didn't get a Super Bowl for you," and then to act this way when he's trying to get those people to accommodate his situation as best they can. He's not helping anybody help himself. I can only picture somebody as experienced as Drew Rosenhaus. He's sitting in the back chewing Rolaids like they're going out of style. I mean, what else is he supposed to do? Rosenhaus works for Brown. It's not the other way around.
Right.
He's not an authority. How is he supposed to sell his client? I mean, Brown is making it really hard for everybody to do what Brown should realize, at the very least. The things that he is doing are not going to help him in Pittsburgh or any other team in the NFL. He's going to regret a lot of this, I think. This isn't going to end well, and in many ways it's really kind of frustrating for as good a player as he is, to see him burn all of his legacy capital on this stuff in just a matter of a couple weeks. Really just a dumb situation.
Because he plays hard. I mean, let's always remember, he, to me, almost always seems to play hard. But I go back to what Larry Fitzgerald said, and the advice was straight to Antonio Brown. He said, "Hey, look, life's a lot better when you have a quarterback." Well, in Pittsburgh, he has a quarterback.
Yeah, when he's got things called Ryan Lindley throwing him the ball down in Arizona, I think he'll understand a little bit more about what Fitzgerald is saying.
Yeah.
And certainly, yeah, I mean, that's a benefit. But I think to some degree, too, that might have triggered Brown even more. I mean, you remember when the Steelers' former PR director or PR manager said something to the effect of wondering what Brown's results would be if he wasn't playing with Ben, and then have Brown kind of fire back at him. He really seems to be kind of a sensitive subject. He doesn't want people to think he's great because of his quarterback. That's absolutely not true, first off. The two of them make each other.
Yes.
Brown is, if you know what you're looking at in the receiver position, you watch him play, he is seriously one of the best receivers the game has ever seen.
He makes Ben look better, and guess what? Ben makes him look better. Just ask Landry Jones.
They're a symbiote partnership, and both of them are going to suffer a little bit because, well, that's what happens when you break up a Hall of Fame duo. They're not going to improve.
Right.
To the degree that Brown will drop off, he's still going to be a great player. How much he's able to do because of the quarterback in whatever situation he finds himself in, we'll find out. But Brown is a phenomenal receiver. I don't think that ever should be understated.
That's right.
He could have finished all of this much better, I think, than what he's going to end up having to finish. And it really is frustrating to see something that it just got completely out of control way too quickly, and the whole thing is ending in an embarrassingly sad fashion. It just should not have happened the way that it is.
Would you be shocked, Neil, if the Arizona Cardinals take Kyler Murray number one?
I would, but necessarily sure if that's a good thing or a bad thing. And I say that because Steve Keim has to kind of go against his own right now sort of spotty recent history with personnel decisions.
Right.
For him to turn his back on Rosen, and let's just say for argument's sake that we know Kyler Murray could be Aaron Rodgers or he could be Chris Sims. We're not 100% sure, but we have a really good feeling about him. It makes sense simply because your end goal is to find that quarterback. If you have to blow three drafts in order to do it, you have to find that quarterback. The cost of that, though, and you look at the whole thing, what that means for Arizona is they're going to put $19 million dead on this year's cap, and that's coming off a horrible season.
Right.
And that about half of that is going to to account for Sam Bradford, Josh Rosen, and it's assuming they cut Mike Glennon, him as well.
Right.
You put all of that together. Why is it, if you're Michael Bidwill, why is it that you want to trust Steve Keim when he comes into your office telling you you have to take Kyler Murray? You blew it in the last three quarterbacks we brought in.
Right.
If he's the guy, I'm not sure I want you to manage him. Yeah. You know, right. This didn't work out with the other guys you told me was the guy. You bring a new coach in, mediocre track record at best, an offensive visionary, all these things that most fans probably don't fully understand. He's had the results in college. Yeah. Hasn't really put anything else around it. He's going to come in and tell you to completely destroy your past season, which is
right.
The reason why he's in his job to begin with,
right.
And take the traditionally not tall enough quarterback with great numbers to play in this system that nobody else in the NFL has done, and we're basing all of this on a 39-year-old coach who didn't win using this system in college. That's a pretty hefty risk.
Yes, I mean, it is. Yes,
you yeah. better know for guaranteed fact Kyler Murray is Aaron Rodgers if you're going to make that deal. I'm not sure I'm at that point right now, but at the same time, I think Arizona certainly has the ability to blow a lot of smoke about what they're going to do.
So what you're saying? So what you're saying is, Kyler Murray is either a Super Bowl winning quarterback or a co-host with Mike Florio on NBC Sports Net. All right, so there doesn't seem like there's a lot in between there, Neil.
I think subconsciously I went to Chris Sims just because of the conversation. And still, you know, right. How about this? Let's find out what Chris Sims thinks about Kyler Murray. I'd love to hear this.
Yeah.
Who in the Patriots organization is telling him that this guy is great or this guy is terrible or whatever?
Right.
I don't know. I really like what I see with Murray. I just think that Keim might get fired in July if he drafts Murray.
Right. And maybe he ends up with Mike Florio.
Yeah, exactly. He becomes Chris Sims' source after that.
That's right.
No, he's going to talk about all the things that he did because that obviously worked out well.
Neil, it's always a pleasure. Thanks so much.
Definitely. Thanks for having me, guys.
Neil Coulong, USA Today, back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Well, they didn't talk about Lent in the promo, so I can't tell my dad's story again. You liked that one, didn't you?
That was awesome. Story time with Steve. We were overdue.
It's been a while since I've done that,
yeah.
Hasn't it? Yeah. Oh, my goodness. Yeah. Ah, the old days.
But the question is, that night, did Dad leave the dinner table and go out and get a steak?
No. He
stayed there, powered through?
He stayed there, powered through, but that was the last Friday night for a while. That had
that on the menu.
That on the menu. In fact, I think that was the last. And the funny thing is, I like it, so I still make it to this day. Oh, well. Donovan Smith ended up getting a great deal with the Tampa Bay Bucks, $27 million guaranteed, 41.25 three-year deal. So Donovan Smith ended up with a great deal. And then you get to the court deals that were made in the basketball case, and it looks like all those, it's all like light. Everything's light. The sentencing didn't quite match all the buildup. I mean, and I thought you said it right when you mentioned that earlier. Okay, that's great, but wow.
It just makes you wonder if there's a precursor not for those guys that will have another trial in their not-too-distant future, but also for, you know, other people that are involved in this mess.
Yeah, I can't.
Like
I can't.
Certain college basketball coaches.
Well, so far the head coaches have been out of this. So far. But you can tell with all of this, mean, it doesn't take a genius to look at it and realize that there's plausible deniability built into this. I mean, it's one of those, everything okay? Everything's good. You know, a lot of nods, and you move on. Yeah, it's like, okay. Now, you're going to hear the clarion call for out of this that players should be paid. That's going to be settled in the courts. That'll be settled in the courts. And it could be settled maybe, I think we'll have a better read in 4 or 5 years on that. But I think that's where we are with all this. Where we are with all this is that it'll go to court. At some point in court, they will make a decision as to whether or not they should be paid, and then adjustments will have to be made from there. You know there'll be appeals to it, but this process is probably going to take 4 or 5 years. I think that's safe to say it's going to be a 4 or 5 year process. And in this 4 or 5 year process, you'll see appeals, and this may be something that eventually gets to the Supreme Court. I don't know. But I think that's where we are in all this. It's not something, for example, that it's not something that I think that is going to happen instantly. I think you'll see along the way that they will be movement that happens, but and that movement that happens will be what we talked about, a court case that will, and that's the one in California, I think, is the one we're all looking at right now, is going to be the one that's going to and kind of change, could potentially change the landscape of everything. And if it does, it's going to really change the landscape of college sports. And it's not going to change the landscape of college football and college basketball much. They'll still get players because they're the ones that would end up getting money if it were to change. It's going to be the other sports. And then you have to make a determination. Now, the next part will be, are they considered to be university employees? If they're considered to be university employees, then believe it or not, I don't think Title IX enters into it. If they're not considered university employees, then Title IX enters into it. It is quite the it's quite the challenge. And there are right now more questions than answers in all of this. Many more. But it's not football and basketball that's worried, because they would make the money that would allow them to continue on, and we'd watch it. Okay. It's the other sports. The other sports are the ones that you have to be worried about, because they don't generate any money. Well, they generate money. Now, let's be real here. They generate money, but they generate it at a loss. And to be realistic with you, they generated at a rather hefty loss. That's where it's going to be. That's where you have to be worried. I mean, these sports don't make enough money to be self-sustaining. And if the athletic departments feel that they need to funnel money for payment or universities, Penn State's in a different spot than others because Penn State is an autonomous athletic department. That, you know, it's now you've got a big problem. As I've said how many times now on the show, Sean, that if you have, if you are a big wrestling fan, Penn State won't drop wrestling. But 60 other schools might. Now suddenly you're competing against 16 other schools. Well, I mean, really, in the end. Or does everybody go to the club model? And all of a sudden your club wrestling, your club hockey. Well, hockey won't be hockey self-sustaining. But your club volleyball, your club whatever. I mean, that's the part about the intercollegiate model I worry about. It's not the football-basketball part. The football-basketball part will take care of itself. Now, you may end up with bidding wars. I don't know how the model's going to work. But you might end up with bidding wars. Okay. If you end up with that, then that brings with another issue. But what I'm concerned about, the other sports that rely on football and basketball to pay for their existence. And it has to tell you everything about Penn State wrestling as a perfect example. They sell out everything. Everything is sold out. There's not a seat available in Rec Hall. The one time they go over to the Jordan Center, every seat's taken. So they're as popular and as outstanding as popular and outstanding gets. Fair enough? Fair enough. But they can't sustain themselves. Can't do it. You have a very budget-minded, frugal's the wrong word, but Cale Sanderson does not waste money. How about that? All right? He does not waste money. He does not make unreasonable requests. Yet, in spite of the fact that you have a coach that doesn't waste money, doesn't do anything outrageous financially, sells everything out, and is the best program in the country, period, they're still running losses between $800,000 and $1 million a year. Well, if the best of the best is doing that, what are the other programs in the country doing? The other programs aren't selling out. I mean, they aren't selling out. I mean, so you think other athletic departments are going to keep them? They're not going to keep them.
By the way, we have some wrestling news to share.
Okay.
The Mid-American Conference has announced a historic membership expansion in wrestling. They have added 7 new affiliate members. And for those who follow wrestling around here, you'll notice an Eastern Wrestling League theme. Bloomsburg, Clarion, Edinburgh, Lock Haven, Ryder, George Mason, and Cleveland State. Next year, starting in 2019-2020, they'll be wrestling in the Mid-American Conference.
So which, by the way, includes Missouri.
That is correct. So, yeah, they will be now jumping up from 7 members to 15. So, currently they have Missouri. They've been a member in the conference since 2013. Old Dominion since 2013. Southern Illinois Edwardsville joined in 2018, as well as Buffalo, Central Michigan, Kent State, Northern Illinois, and Ohio. So they'll jump up to 15 teams next year. Missouri currently ranked number 5 in the country.
So does that mean the EWL is dissolving?
That's what it sounds like. So now the MAC will be the second largest NCAA Division I wrestling conference, right behind the Big Ten.
Okay.
Last week, the MAC was allocated 27 qualifiers for this year's wrestling championships coming up later this month in Pittsburgh.
I mean, that's all well and good. All right, that's all well and good. But that doesn't do anything for the, to be honest with you. It's just, it's a merger. Again, what will be really good for wrestling? I mean, that's fine. All right, there's nothing wrong with that. But let's be realistic here. You need to have Clemson or Alabama or somebody add the sport. And I've said that before. Again, we try to talk in real terms here. I mean, the rides of Fantasyland in this show are not open. Okay? What the sport needs desperately is for a home run hitter to add the sport and have everybody go, whoa. Okay? That's nice what happened, and it's great for Bloomsburg. That's terrific. Okay? But for the sport as a whole, Clemson needs to add it, or Georgia needs to add it, or Texas needs to add it, or USC needs to add it, or suddenly you sit back and go, whoa. Okay, now, nobody, okay, as long as that court case is out in California, nobody's adding anything. I think it's nice. I mean, the fact that you might get Missouri wrestling at Bloomsburg, that'd be great. That'd be great. But there's got to be some realism to it here. And I think if you're a wrestling fan, you got to be worried about all this stuff. You really have to be worried about it. Again, if you are asking, let's see. If you are asking, I mean, you got to worry about the 65 Power Five. So there's only 28 schools in Power Five out of 65. Only 28 of them have wrestling. Okay. If suddenly that they start paying, I can tell you the 14 non Big Ten schools, they're dropping it. That sounds cruel. But again, we're trying to talk in realistic terms here. Exactly where are they going to be adding the sport if you have to start paying athletes? Where? You know, and don't be one of those callers who go, well, Bo Nickel and Jason Nolfer work. So, no, it doesn't work that way. It doesn't work that way at all. It's not the real world. It's not real. Okay, the third string quarterback's the one's going to be getting money. But we'll let the courts settle that, and the courts will settle it one way or the other. Does the amateurism model that I am a firm and deep believer in college athletics, continue on, or does it change and turn it into semi-pro? And if it does, then what's the collateral damage to that? Yes, athletes will be getting paid to fill stadiums and arenas, okay, in football and basketball, but what's the collateral damage to other sports? It's a realistic question that needs to be asked and discussed, because anytime it's discussed nationally, you always hear the same thing over and over again. The same refrain over and over again is as follows. They're making all this money off the sweat and the backs of these student athletes. Oh, my goodness. Well, okay, that's fine. Right? But nobody takes it the additional step further. Nobody has the ability to take it to the multiple levels that need to be discussed here. It's always the simplistic. Look at all the money Kyler Murray made for Oklahoma. Okay, great job of being the simpleton in the room. Now take it deeper. What's a scholarship worth? What's the food worth? What's the books worth? What's the education part worth?
Okay, what's the gear worth? What are the tickets of the players worth? I mean, there's multiple levels, and if you pay them, they're going to have to pay taxes on all these things. A scholarship is non-taxable. And you never hear any talk show host talk about a Pell Grant. Never. Never hear a talk show host. When's the last time you heard a talk show host talk about a Pell Grant? Which right now they're all, which right now nearly half of them are eligible for. And guess what? Pell Grant's free money.
I was one of my best friends in college 30 years ago.
Yeah.
Oh, I mean, yeah.
Pell Grant's free money. It's what it is. It's never talked about in conjunction with the stipend they get. It's never talked about. And the reason I talk about this stuff is that I'm thinking the other sports. I am not thinking about football and basketball. That will take care of itself. I've always been thinking about the other 28 sports. And I don't include men's ice hockey. They have a fudge factor on profit, which is good. We'll come back, wrap it up in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC Way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC Way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC Way. The SMC Way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Great to have you with us. I just get concerned about where it's going. And it's not, I'm not concerned about where football is going to go. I'm not concerned about where men's basketball is going to go. I mean, men's basketball is going to be, continue to be the cash cow for the NCAA. Football is going to be the cash cow for universities to make their money, or athletic departments. And they're going to be fine. And there's, you know, between gate receipts and television and bowl money and NCAA tournament money, there's money. Problem is, all these other sports don't have those advantages. They don't have TV. They don't have radio money. They have some attendance money. They don't have any NCAA tournament money. It's like, don't be naive. I don't want to hear anybody, oh, no, they're going to be in the NCAA championship. They're going to be on TV, on ESPN. You get expenses. That's what you get. You don't make any money from it. Zero. You get expenses. Your hotels are taken care of, and so is your transportation. That's the end of it.
Your station for news, weather, business, and CBS Sports Radio. News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury and on WKOK.com.